Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Well, good evening, everyone. Sports Beat on the air. I'm Darren Pritchett on my way to Fifth Third Ballpark for the South Bend Cubs West Michigan game. Traffic is pretty fierce. Eric, I didn't know Grand Rapids traffic was like Chicago. It's pretty rough, to say the least. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartandVascular.org. Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn card, just $99. And with that card, you can get up to 80% off rounds of golf, including cart, at Blackthorn. And by Ivy Court Inn and Suites, with competitive corporate rates, you're in with Ivy Court Inn and Suites. Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune, is back in our WSBT studios. Again, I'm Darren Pritchett, working my way to Fifth Third Ballpark in Comstock Park for the Cubs-Whitecaps game tonight at 7:05. Eric, how are you?
Doing good, Darren. How are you doing?
When I get done with the traffic, I'm going to be a whole lot better.
All right.
Well, like I said, I didn't know Grand Rapids traffic was like Chicago, but I guess there have been a couple of accidents from the hotel to the ballpark, so things are moving a little slower than expected, but hopefully I'll be at the ballpark here in just a couple of moments. But by golly, we can chat away as we've got some Notre Dame football conversation in our opening segment. We're going to talk about surprise teams, according to Phil Steele, that have shown up on the Irish schedule. We've got college football questions to get to at the bottom of the hour to get you set for the start of the season. The My Five question of the day: of the Notre Dame players that have left the program since the LSU game, by their choice or not, which five will the Irish miss the most? Next hour, we'll have rapid fire, and we're going to play back our conversation with former Irish quarterback Ron Paulus, now the director of Notre Dame football player development. He is going to remind us about the big event Monday, the charity softball event at Four Winds Field, as the Irish football team will take on local law enforcement, with Indiana cops being the beneficiary of all the funds raised for this charity softball game. And we'll talk some football as well with Ron coming up. That's next hour, and then we've got pregame coverage of the Cubs and the Whitecaps at 6:50, and the first pitch comes your way at 7:05. Eric, we started to talk a little bit yesterday about Phil Steele, who has that great college football magazine previewing all the teams across the country. His surprise team list featured Notre Dame at number one, so that was a bit of a surprise, at least from my standpoint, but we did talk about that. Texas is two, Michigan State three, and then, Eric, the next four teams on this surprise list are on the Irish football schedule, so let's just talk about that for a couple of moments. We'll begin with number four on Phil's surprise list, and it's the Michigan Wolverines. Now, we've talked extensively about how good the Wolverine defense is likely going to be this year, and you've got Shea Patterson, the transfer from Ole Miss. He can play. Are you surprised that Michigan's on a surprise list?
Not really, kind of given the criteria. You know, they were 8-5 last year overall, 5-4 in the Big Ten. And whenever you bring a defense that's as good as them, you have a chance to be pretty good. And they had a really good defense last year and went 8-5 just because their offense was so bad. And with Shea Patterson, that there's been some shakeup in terms of offensive coaches, I think there is optimism that Michigan will at least be average on offense and maybe a little bit better than that. So I think that's why Michigan finds itself in that spot.
Well, Eric, with Patterson, they have the potential to be good. Now, again, he's had turnover problems in his limited amount of playing time when he was down at Ole Miss. What could hold back Michigan from being that surprise team? Let's just focus on the offensive side of the football. What could prevent them from being really good?
Well, their offensive line wasn't very good last year, and if it's about the same, then they're going to have problems no matter how good Shea Patterson is. The other issue that they really had on offense was the running game, and some of that went into the offensive line, was part of the offensive line contributed to that. And so if those two things aren't all that hot, then Shea Patterson really has a limit on what he can do in terms of uplifting that football team. Certainly, he's a guy that...
Hi, I'm the Falcon Cubs broadcaster.
All right.
Thank you.
Certainly, he's a guy that upgrades the quarterback position, because they just haven't had really good quarterback play since Jim Harbaugh has been there. This will be the best material. But again, he's got to take a step up in his play. You know, everybody is assuming that he is going to make an incremental jump this year toward being that five-star guy coming out of high school. And sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. It never happened yet for Blake Barnett, who's bounced around from Alabama to Arizona State and now is at his third school, I believe, South Florida. So sometimes it doesn't happen, but that's the thought, that he's going to be better. But again, running game and offensive line have to move, progress along with him as well.
What about play calling, Eric? I mean, they've had a lot of changes up there. Are we certain they're going to have the proper guy in place to get the job done?
We really don't know, because right now Jim Harbaugh hasn't designated somebody as the offensive coordinator. He is, listen to this, here's the word that he is using, collaboration. He likes the collaboration. When have we heard that word before? So right now there are a few different folks involved. McElwain from Florida, Ed Warner, who's was at Notre Dame at one point, Ohio State, bounced around a little bit, and Jim Harbaugh. I would say those would be the people that are in the collaboration right now. Will somebody kind of emerge from that? I think Shea Patterson would certainly hope so, because I think it would help him understand what's going to be expected of him, what the offense is supposed to look like, if there's a clear leader in that offense. And maybe, again, there actually is, and Jim Harbaugh is just playing games.
This kind of sounds like the old saying, when you have two quarterbacks, you have none. When you have a collaboration going on, I don't know if you fully know what exactly the direction you fully want to go with the new quarterback.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And Darren, their schedule isn't very easy this year. They've had some years where they've had some favorable crossover games. You know, you look, they play Notre Dame. We assume that Nebraska's going to be better with Scott Frost. That's one of their crossover games. The road game at Northwestern is a crossover game. Wisconsin is a crossover game. And then they have Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan State from their own division. So, I mean, there's really good competition there. That Notre Dame game is a game that they've got to win out of the gate, because that schedule gets much tougher in the second half of it.
We're talking about surprise teams on the average football schedule. According to Phil Steele, Notre Dame is number one on that list, Michigan 4, another team on the Irish schedule that made his surprise list is the Stanford Cardinals. So, again, Eric, I know I understand the criteria, but at the same time, with the quarterback play they got late in the year, once they made a change, and it just seems like they have the makings to have a pretty decent team. So out of the teams we're going to talk about, I'm really surprised Stanford would make that list. So as you've evaluated Stanford, what do you see?
Well, KJ Costello was an upgrade at the quarterback position. He was really good, and he had a really good game against Notre Dame. That was his best game. And you look, and they have Bryce Love, who's the best running back in the country. They're going to have a very good offensive line. They've got big receivers that people have trouble dealing with. Where I'm skeptical of Stanford being on this improve list is their defense. had they been able to keep all their underclassmen from going into the draft, I think they would have been decent on defense. But they weren't great on defense last year, and they lost Harrison Phillips. They lost Reed, the safety. They lost another underclassman that was a starter. And you take away three of your most dynamic playmakers on defense, I don't see it. Again, maybe there were some guys that had great springs that are going to change a 9-5 team that went 7-2 in the Pac-12 into something more than that. But, you know, and again, you look at their schedule, and it's not easy. They got USC pretty early. They play at Oregon. Oregon's going to be better. The Notre Dame game is on the road. They have Washington again. Washington's supposed to be a top-5 team. So I'm more skeptical of Stanford improving than I am Michigan, even though, you know, Michigan's schedule is going to make it difficult for them.
Eric and Darren with you, WSBT Radio Sports Beat on this Friday evening. Another team that made the surprise list, Eric, was USC. Now, this one kind of makes sense to me because I think this is one of those teams that you maybe buy low and get some reward later down the line. I mean, you've got a possibility of having a guy who's a senior quarterback in high school this year as their starter down. Out of all the teams, this is one that actually makes the most sense to me because there's potential.
Darren, you're breaking up a little bit, so I'm just going to jump in and interrupt you in case you're still talking. USC was 11-3 overall last year. They were 8-1. After they got blown out by Notre Dame, they had a pretty good run of games, but they didn't play particularly difficult teams in the few games that were after Notre Dame, and they ended up, you know, ascending back into the top 10 at one point. You know, their USC is kind of how they are in a lot of years. There are really, they have a lot of playmakers. I don't know that they have a great team. I don't know that they are solid at every position. There's holes. They certainly have depth issues, but it's not just JT Daniels. I think Amon-Ra St. Brown, as a true freshman, is going to be every bit as good as advertised. I think he's going to be somebody that makes a difference on offense for them. And the fact that JT and Amon-Ra played high school ball together, they already have some chemistry. And I think JT Daniels is going to end up being the starting quarterback at some point.
Wow.
When you look at their schedule, again, I mentioned that they play Stanford early. It's not an overwhelming schedule. Notre Dame may be the most difficult game on the schedule other than Stanford, and I think Notre Dame is a better team than Stanford. So their schedule isn't as daunting as it is sometimes. They don't have that marquee game. Although, I'll tell you what, at Texas, this might be the year Texas can get them. This may be the year that Texas is finally back, but we'll have to see. But there is a road game at Texas in September that could possibly be tricky. Again, guys, they're a kind of team that kind of needs good luck because of their depth situation. They always have playmakers. It's just, how does the chemistry work? Is Clay Helton really an elite coach? I think we're going to find that out this year.
Guys, just to let you know, I've made it to the ballpark so I can transition to my Comrex. If we can do that right now, we good to go?
Jerry is giving me hand signals, I think. Jerry, are we good to go with the Comrex? He's giving me a thumbs up. That's the universal yes.
Okay, then we'll make the transition right now then. So, Eric, just as the follow-up question, I know all of you guys at the South Bend Tribune working on the ND Insider Notre Dame football preview, which will be coming out in a few weeks. You always have to go through and do your prognostications. You go through each game, what Notre Dame is going to do in each game. When you look at the USC game right now, I know it's June and a lot can happen, but how do you assess that game from a Notre Dame standpoint?
Well, I don't like where it is placed on the schedule, and I don't like where it's being played. Those are the things that concern me.
Other than that, it's great.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's say they played USC in September. I think Notre Dame wins that game, especially if it's in South Bend. But you're talking about the fourth road game in a five-week stretch, and Notre Dame will have just played on the East Coast the previous week. I'm not digging that. And they will have already been to the West Coast in November to play Navy at the beginning of the month. I think that that's a bad stretch. Now, Brian Kelly is addressing this through Matt Bayless's programs and so forth. But realistically, is it going to pay off? I don't know. I think a lot of it depends on how deep Notre Dame can go in its defense and how deep it can go at, let's say, wide receiver and running back. If you can keep players fresh so that they can make that November run with all the travel, then maybe you got something there. The thing that's kind of the unknown is, you know, Matt Bayless' second year, how much will that help this team? Because, again, you were forming a nice foundation last year with what Matt Bayless did, and Notre Dame into November was a team that was really strong in the fourth quarter. As they got into November, they weren't as good in the fourth quarter. And I think some of it, too, is, you know, you're battling a lot of negativity, and every game was kind of the proving ground for Brian Kelly. You know, they're not going to have that this year. Unless they get off to a bad start, they're not going to have that hanging over their heads of, you know, kind of playing for their coach and all that, all the kind of white noise. They're not going to have that this year, because especially if they beat Michigan and are able to pick off Virginia Tech on the road, they're not going to be as worn out mentally and emotionally when they get to November. But physically is another story with all the travel. And again, when you're traveling in November, you don't always have the ideal conditions. You know,
sure.
There's snowstorms and bad weather. And I realize that you're landing in California in a couple of those, but you're landing in New York in one of them. And you're taking off from South Bend in all of them, and there can be delays and all kinds of problems. So we'll see how that plays out. I mean, they're young people, but they're also human beings.
Well, bottom line is, Eric, when I look at the rosters, Notre Dame has a better roster than USC. And I think the quarterback position, Notre Dame will have the advantage, even though there's a lot of questions about Brandon. Taking away November and the travel and all that stuff, if they were just playing a simple football game, I think Notre Dame's the better team right now.
I agree. That's why even a neutral site game, let's say they're playing in New Orleans in September, I think Notre Dame wins that game. But I just wonder what Notre Dame is going to look like, because Notre Dame was better than Stanford, but when they played Stanford, they weren't the same team they were earlier.
All right, one more team to go, looking at Phil Steele's 2018 surprise team list. Notre Dame was number one, and then 2 through 6 was Texas, Michigan State, Michigan, Stanford, USC, and another team on the Irish schedule is Florida State. DeAndre Francois, James Blackman are two quarterbacks battling for the starting job for Florida State. We'll have to see who wins that job. I know, Eric, you have your opinion on the Seminoles. Do you see the Seminoles as one of those teams that could fall into the category of a surprise team, mainly because, Eric, they're coming off a really rough year last year, a very rare off year for the Seminoles?
Yeah, 7-6 for them, 3-5 in the ACC. Their coach bolts to go to Texas A&M and hire Mike Elko.
Yeah.
And it looked like at points, Darren, and maybe that's a good thing that Willie Taggart's there. Maybe he re-energizes them, because there were times where you would be watching them on TV and the people that were calling the game were accusing them of quitting or wondering whether that was a team that was giving it its all, if it had just given up both on the game and the season.
Right.
They have a weird opener. They play an ACC team in an opener, and it's Virginia Tech. So that's going to be, if Virginia Tech has its quarterback, and I have to check Andy Bitter's stories today to see if there's still hope that Josh Jackson is going to play for them.
I don't think anything's changed yet.
Okay, so nothing's changed yet. And you look down the rest of their schedule, at Miami, kind of in the middle, is going to be difficult. They host Clemson. They go to NC State, although I don't know that NC State, at least defensively, is going to be what they were last year.
Right.
They play Notre Dame right after they play NC State. They play Florida in their finale. You know, I could see them being better, but I'm really curious of how that quarterback situation. I'm stunned that it's that close between those two. Francois was so much the better prospect before he got hurt. And I didn't see Blackman do enough last year. But again, you know, Francois had a little bit of a hiccup legally in the spring. And again, you got a new coach that's trying to evaluate these guys. I still have a hard time believing Blackman's going to win that job.
So that's a fun little conversation on surprise teams in college football, according to Phil Steele, who has that college football magazine that comes out every year. He's got Notre Dame number one, and then he's got four Irish opponents, 4 through 7, Michigan, Stanford, USC, and Florida State. It is now 26 minutes after the top of the hour. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you on Sports Beat. When we come back, we have put together 5 college football questions to wet your whistle on the upcoming college football season. There's a Big Ten in general question. There is a question about whether the best tight end in Indiana is at Purdue. That was on a list that I saw earlier today. And also, did the early signing period work? We'll ask Eric about that coming up in just a couple of moments as Sports Beat continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen with you. It is now 5:32 on this Friday evening. And we are going to get to, Eric, some college football questions, just general questions about the upcoming season. And we'll just get into a little college football debate on this Friday evening. We'll start with this. I was reading an article on the way up to Comstock Park today on the Big Ten's 9-game football schedule, and this article stated that this helps to protect the trophy games that the conference has, and it gets them more money in TV deals because they are basically eliminating a weaker non-conference game and adding a conference game against a obviously more well-recognizable name. But this article says it does not put the Big Ten in the best position to make the playoff and win a national championship. Ohio State has won a title during the playoff era. So their example was, well, Alabama plays Mercer, Ohio State takes on Iowa, or they take on Northwestern or Minnesota. So do you agree or disagree that the 9-game football schedule that the Big Ten goes with hurts them come playoff time or maybe even bowl time?
How many games are they playing, Darren?
9 times, my friend.
I think it's too much of a blanket statement to say that it hurts them. Here's kind of how college football will align now that the Big Ten is going to 9 conference games. The Pac-12, the Big 12, and the Big Ten will all play 9 games. The SEC will play 8. The ACC will play 8. Here's the thing, though. If the ninth game that you wouldn't have had is a crossover game with Illinois, they're worse than some of the teams that you could play in non-conference.
I'm not offended by that.
Okay. The other thing is, you know, it depends. Again, it's such a blanket statement because
right.
If you're in the Big Ten West, the SEC East, the ACC Coastal, you maybe wouldn't want that extra conference game to boost your strength of schedule because sometimes the teams in those divisions play very weak competition.
Wisconsin.
Depending on their crossover game. Wisconsin did last year. The year before, Wisconsin had some challenging crossover games, but last year they didn't. Iowa, the year that they were in the Big Ten championship game, had weak crossover competition. Sometimes it's just kind of the luck of the draw with the crossover
sure.
games. And then you have Tennessee in the SEC East. You know, there's not a clear rotation there. Tennessee has to play Alabama as a crossover game every year, whereas other teams in the SEC East can skip Alabama most years. So do you see what I'm saying? It's hard to throw a blanket statement here, but I don't necessarily think. I think what's going to make it difficult is scheduling non-conference games because there's going to be some years where you only have 4 home conference games. That means to go 7-5 with your 7 home games and 5 away games, you've got to go out and get 3 non-conference games and that are home games, and that's not always an easy thing.
It comes down to being better football teams on the schedule. Ohio State is a prime example. They are not going to be bothered at all by this in my opinion. Sure, if you went out and played someone absolutely horrible, yeah, you're going to win that game, and maybe you get upset. I mean, they got upset by Iowa. Was that last year in Iowa City? The Buckeyes they got hammered. That's right. That was the game. They got hammered by Iowa. So, sure, it could factor in. But you know what? Ohio State, year in and year out, we know who they are. They're going to win their good majority of football games. They're probably going to have two or fewer losses pretty much every single year, and that's going to put them on the hunt. And they always play a good enough, Eric, non-conference schedule where they always give themselves a chance to make the college football playoff. Because you know what? They're darn good. They schedule just enough, and the Big Ten gives them just enough challenges to get into the playoff.
You almost sound like Stuart Smalley, who used to be on Saturday Night Live. They're good enough, they're smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like them.
I don't know if people like them north of the border up here where I am, here in Comstock Park, Michigan, but otherwise, can't disagree with you. All right, another college football question. Mr. Hansen, the Purdue Boilermakers under Coach Brohm went 7-6 last year, 4-5 in the grand old Big Ten Conference. So, you have two questions to answer. Will the Boilermakers' record overall be better than last year? Will it be the same or get worse? And the same for their conference record. Better, neutral, or worse? We'll start with the 7-6 overall.
I think they're going to be pretty close to that. I kind of went through their schedule and counted 7-5, but there's a lot of swing games there. There's the opener is against Northwestern. Missouri's kind of a swing game, but that's at home. BC probably could go either way, although I don't know that they have good enough quarterback play.
Right.
You know, and then there's games that you say there's no way they're going to win. Ohio State, Michigan State on the road. Wisconsin, I think, is difficult. The at Minnesota game, I think.
Dangerous.
Yeah. But I do think Jeff Brohm's a better coach than Row the Boat is. PJ Fleck. Yeah. I have them at 7-5 and about the same in the conference. But again, those. The Minnesota game, the Northwestern game are two really big swing games that could affect both of those predictions.
Well, you laid it all out there very nicely. I have them a game worse. I'm going to say they go 6-6 during the regular season. So I'm going to say they're just a hair worse than last year. Now, conference record, Eric, they were 4-5 in the Big Ten. So better, neutral, or worse?
I think that they're going to be about the same as I look at that. They're going to lose, I think, to Ohio State, Michigan State, Wisconsin, and probably one other game. That again, the Northwestern Minnesota games are the tricky ones. Iowa, they're going to lose, I think, so that's four. I think they're going to probably split those swing games. So I have them winning their three non-conference games against Eastern Michigan, Missouri, and Boston College. So I think they're going to be 4-5, right what they were last year.
I agree. Everything you said, I had the same exact games marked, so I've got Purdue 4-5, so we'll just both go with neutral with the Boilermakers in Big Ten Conference play. College football question number three. This is a little Las Vegas. We're not bettors, but this is just kind of for fun. We'll play with Monopoly money. Which is the better bet? Ohio State's win total is set at 9.5. Florida State at 7.5. So which is the better bet?
Well, that would mean to win, nobody's going to win a half of a game. So you would have to get 10 wins for Ohio State versus 8 for Florida State. I have Ohio State in the playoff next year. Their non-conference games are Oregon State, Rutgers, Texas Christian, and Tulane. And I think TCU is pretty decent, but I think they win all of those. And then when you go to the conference games, Michigan State's always kind of a bugaboo for them. You know, the Michigan game is Michigan, but they've owned Jim Harbaugh so far. Penn State at Penn State, that's the game that probably I would give them a loss. So I'm comfortable with giving them 10 wins. I don't think they're going to lose more than two.
I agree with that. I'll just stop you right there. I got Ohio State with 11 wins. So I think that's a really, really solid bet. So now we go to Florida State, who's coming off an off year. They've got a brand new head coach, Willie Taggart. And as you mentioned earlier, they start with Virginia Tech. Then they've got Samford, Syracuse, Northern Illinois, Louisville. They've got a game against Miami, then Wake Forest, Clemson, that's at home, NC State, Notre Dame, Boston College, and Florida. So, Eric, that's a pretty challenging schedule for the Seminoles.
Yeah, I think Florida's a loss probably, Notre Dame's a loss, Clemson's a loss, Miami's a loss, Virginia Tech, we don't know who's going to show up for Virginia Tech.
Louisville's tough just because they don't have Lamar Jackson. It is on the road, but that probably is a game hard to pick.
Right. NC State's going to be hard to pick. They still have Ryan Finley. They lost all their really good defensive linemen, but Nyheim Hines went pro early, the really good running back. But I think that's going to be a difficult game to win in Raleigh. Willie Taggart is kind of the unknown here, because how is he going to do in year one with Florida State? You know, how is he going to be in terms of, you know, coaching a game? He was a good coach at South Florida. We barely saw him at Oregon, and then he was off to Florida State. You know, and how easily will that team take his new schemes? You know, they have one of the best running backs in the country in Cam Akers. They've got some difference makers on defense. Do they have a whole team of them? I don't know. And again, that whole quarterback situation bothers me. If Blackman's the quarterback, there's no way I think they win eight games. I just don't think he's an eight-win quarterback. I can't believe that this is that close. And maybe it's just because it's a new coach that wants to give everybody a chance.
Could be. At Miami, Clemson, at NC State, at Notre Dame, Florida. That's five possible losses right there. And that's why I think that Ohio State win total is the better bet compared to Florida State at 7.5. Just too many variables that could swing one way or the other with the boys from Tallahassee. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you, SportsBeat on WSBT Radio. Question number four in terms of the upcoming college football season. I saw a best tight end list earlier today, and the highest-ranked tight end from the Hoosier State plays at Purdue and not at Notre Dame. They have Bryson Hopkins as the best-rated tight end from all the college schools in Indiana. So, Mr. Hansen, is Hopkins the best tight end in the state of Indiana?
No.
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 Can you believe that?
I mean, he had a nice year last year, 25 catches, 349 yards, and three touchdowns. He certainly was more consistent than Alize Mack. Alize Mack is more talented. If Alize Mack plays in the fall the way he did in the spring, he will put away Bryson Hopkins. And I'll tell you what, Cole Kmet and Brock Wright, I think, are better than Bryson Hopkins. I don't think Bryson Hopkins would be in Notre Dame's top three tight ends. However,
he wouldn't play.
But I'm not downgrading him because Notre Dame is tight end U, and next year it's going to feel like it.
I'm with you. I don't think he gets on the field with the Irish. And again, that's not saying he's a bad football player. It's just the depth right now that Notre Dame has. It's just one of those situations right now where it's tough to be a tight end at Notre Dame, and you got a redshirt senior who could probably play a lot for a lot of teams, but right now he's buried on this roster. So I was surprised by the analysis. Hey, everybody has their own opinions about all these subjects, but very surprised to see Hopkins was listed ahead of all the Irish tight ends. Finally, I'm going to let you attack this one. This is more in your ballpark since I am not a recruiting guy. So the fifth and final college football question today on this Friday, did the early signing period work last year? And you can define what work means.
For Notre Dame or for everybody?
If you would like to start with Notre Dame and maybe just throw in a quick overall thought, that would be perfect.
I thought Notre Dame figured it out. I think where a lot of coaches were bellyaching, Notre Dame and several other schools just said, this is the rule. We're gonna try to sign everybody that we can in December and not have anybody linger in February. And they were able to sell kids on getting it out of the way, and they were able to get, I believe, 21 of their signees in,
wow,
in December, and then they were able to add to that class. And the advantage of that was they got a great jump on 2019 kids, and it's starting to show up in their recruiting now. You know, if they get a few more commitments, they're going to be in a top three class. I realize you got a long way to go to February, but they're doing very well in recruiting right now, and some of that is because they played the game right. Now, as far as nationally, you know, I know that there were a lot of national writers that felt like this hurts the late bloomers, kids that had a great senior year that were kind of a little bit under the radar, or kids that maybe were had been recruited by MAC schools that might get an offer late in the cycle. I don't know that I still think there's enough slots left where those things can happen. You know, that not everybody signs everybody in December.
Sure.
And so there's a few slots going on. So I liked it. I didn't see where it was the big problem and the big headache that everybody purported it to be. And the kids that signed early seem to be happy. Yes, you do have coaches leave. We saw a rash of assistant coaching changes, including Mike Elko leaving Notre Dame for Texas A&M. But I think if you – and Harry Hiestand left also. But, you know, Jeff Quinn was able to get Luke Jones to stay in the class. He had verbally committed in the interim in between the two periods. And then he was able to go out and get Jarrett Patterson, a really good offensive lineman from California, and sign him. So – again, the kids that were upset about Elko leaving were pretty happy about Clark Lee staying and being elevated to defensive coordinator. So in Notre Dame's case, it certainly worked out. And I think in most places it did. If you just had the one signing period, there's still going to be assistant coaches that leave. This just kind of moved up the calendar in terms of that coaching carousel.
Eric, honestly, really, this signing period, as a novice recruiting person, the only people that truly were hurt by this were all the websites that focus all of their work on the recruiting cycle, because they lost a lot of steam in January leading up to National Signing Day in February. I mean, that was probably a time where they got the most hits on their website and the most people subscribing to their premium services. Let's be honest, most of the drama was done for a lot of these schools before we got to January 1st. So I think all the recruiting websites were the ones that were doing most of the whining, because let's face it, it hurt them more than really anybody else, because all that January traffic really slowed down.
I would agree with you. There wasn't as much drama. There weren't as many decommitments and flips and so forth in January, and you know, the class rankings didn't move as much on a daily basis.
There was no reason to go to those sites really at that point,
other than right around signing day. I would agree, and those were the people I think that bellyached the loudest. But you know, I thought it was outstanding. Let's wait and see another couple years and see if we find the seamy side of this whole issue, but I didn't see it in this cycle.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you, answering some college football questions. When we come back, we'll do the My 5 question of the day from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Today's My 5 question of the day: of the Notre Dame players that have left the program by their choice or not since the LSU game, which five will the Irish miss the most as we get set for the 18 season? Eric has five answers ready to go. Here comes answer number five.
Well, I have to preface this. I didn't include people that graduated, and I didn't include Quentin Nelson because that was too easy, even though he left a year of eligibility on the table. Only dismissed players that transferred, and early entries into the NFL draft. Number five, I'm going with C.J. Sanders. He did nothing in the offense last year, very little opportunities after having opportunities early in his career, but he was really good on kickoff returns, and at one point was very good on punt returns. He would break one every once in a while and he's just a really good guy to have in your special teams arsenal.
Number four,
Number four, I'm going with Nick Watkins, and only because he would be higher on this list, but there are so many other good corners that's why Nick Watkins is going to Houston, the University of Houston, instead of being at Notre Dame. There's just too many good corners. He wants to start. He'll get his opportunity there.
We're going through the list of players that left the Irish program by their choice or not. Which five will the Irish miss the most? We're going now to number three.
This one was a hard one to place, and it's Equanimeous St. Brown. He was Notre Dame's leading receiver last year, and yet he could have been so much more. Some of that was on Brandon Wimbush. Some of that was on Equanimeous, though. And with Miles Boykin having such a strong spring and such a strong bowl game, they're not going to miss Equanimeous as much as they could have.
Number two.
Going to go with Josh Adams, a 1,000-yard rusher, kind of faded in November. But given the fact that Dexter Williams likely is going to miss several games to start the season because of disciplinary reasons, and you don't have a lot of exclamation points, you have some good possibilities, it would have been nice to have Josh Adams back, a guy that you know would be able to get you 1,000 yards in a season.
Of the Notre Dame players that have left the program by their choice or not, which five will the Irish miss the most? Five through two, C.J. Sanders, Nick Watkins, Equanimeous St. Brown, Josh Adams, and answer number one is?
Not for his off-the-field stuff, but certainly for his on-the-field, Kevin Stefferson. Kevin had a knack for being able to run by cornerbacks, get open, make big plays. He just couldn't get his life off the field together, and that's why he's no longer part of the program. Perhaps Notre Dame will have someone emerge in that role, but Stefferson is a guy that, you know, is that rare guy that can stretch the field.
That is the By 5 question of the day from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Tom Noy has a column on Kalen Shively, Bremen softball player. Bremen plays for the Class 2A softball state championship tomorrow. St. Joe plays for the 3A title. We have Endy recruiting from Tyler, Symetra tour from Kyrie. We have Indiana State singles and doubles tournament and much, much more.
Eric, enjoy your weekend. We will talk again on Monday.
Thank you.
Sean Stiers will join me in just a couple of moments. It is 6 o'clock at 96.1 WSBT, South Bend, the sports leader.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their 9th in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Hour number two of Sports Beats on this Friday evening. Sean back in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett, traveling with the South Bend Cubs. We are in Comstock Park, Michigan, near Grand Rapids, getting set for game one of a five-game series, South Bend and West Michigan. Game one tonight is set for 7:05, pregame coverage at 6:50. Then we play a doubleheader tomorrow, an afternoon game on Sunday, and a night game on Monday before we return home for a three-game set Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday against the Dayton Dragons. All right, we have a little football/charity softball conversation to get to later on this hour. Ron Paulus joined the program earlier in the week to talk about the charity softball game at Four Winds Field Monday night at 7 o'clock. The Irish football team is squaring off against local law enforcement. So Ron has all the details, and we talked some Notre Dame football as well with Ron. So the former Irish quarterback's going to be back on the program via Memorex coming up in just a little bit. And we should mention also, the Cubs have already won today. They beat the Pirates by a score of 3-1 at Wrigley Field. And Mr. Stiers, the ever-changing leadoff man story for the Cubs was in full swing today as Chris Bryant was the leadoff man for the first time, and he went 3-for-4 with a run scored. Joe Madden, the Cubs manager, quote, "I try to do that now and again with different guys to get them unearthed a little bit. I just want him to play the game, do something to help us win. Don't worry about hits, homers, anything else. It's a change of scenery. Put them in a different seat. See what they feel like," end quote. So that is Joe Madden talking about putting his slugger in the leadoff spot. What do you say?
Interesting spot to put him in. I saw a tweet where it sounds like he's going to be back at the top of the order again tomorrow. I mean, I guess if nothing else, you get more at-bats. It's an interesting spot, especially for a power guy, because I think sometimes you put those guys up there. I mean, along the thought, I think we saw it a little bit with Kyle Schwarber last year. I would think that they get into their head that maybe they need to take more pitches because they're in the leadoff spot and that kind of thing. But Bryant responded today. He was 3-for-4, had a run, didn't drive any in, but he had 3 hits up there at the top of the order. So who knows? The mad genius, Joe Madden, maybe he's got it all figured out. Albert Almora was in the order, and he hit a lot lower. He was in the leadoff spot again 6 last night. He did fine. So I don't know.
Yeah, Almora hit 6 today. Javi Baez 7th. Ian Happ 8th. Well, it is intriguing, and I know we've talked about this a lot. We've talked about when Anthony Rizzo has been placed in the leadoff spot. And I guess I look at it from an opposing manager standpoint. I think every manager would be okay with Bryant hitting leadoff. First off, you're guaranteed his first at bat of every game. The best he can do is hit a solo home run. If he's hitting third or fourth, it could be a lot more damage. So that's the first thing that comes to mind. The second is he is then, for the rest of the game, going to hit behind the pitcher unless there's a double switch.
Yeah.
So that probably loses a base runner in front of him. So I'm not a big fan of that. And this is just me being an old bullheaded guy, that your best hitter has to bat third. And Chris Bryant, by far, is the best hitter on this team. So my grumpy old ways that aren't going to change, I guess. Chris Bryant, I pencil him in number 3 every single day, and I go to the ballpark smiling and laughing, knowing that that's my number 3 hitter every time I fill out the lineup card.
And I tend to like what's kind of become a sabermetric way of the lineup with your best guy in the 2 spot, because it's kind of a compromise. He's not leading off, but at the same time, he's going to get more at-bats. As you've said, the same deal with the guy batting third. He's going to come up he's guaranteed to come up in the first inning, and he's also batting just one spot behind the leadoff guy. So I kind of like it in the middle. I like your best guy hitting second. Jason Hayward hit second. I don't think he's considered the best guy, but he ended up with a couple hits today too. So
I'm trying to warm up to that thinking, because I believe in the analytics that are a part of the game. That one I just haven't been sold on. I mean, I do like a bopper in the 2 hole.
Yeah.
I think that is a very influential place in the lineup to put a guy. I mean, you could argue, if you're going to mess around with a lineup, Almora leading off, Rizzo second, Bryant third. Then you got right, left, right, and you got plenty of pop. Rizzo gets hit a lot. He walks a lot. So there's an extra guy on base in front of Chris Bryant. So even though I love Rizzo hitting fourth, I could see from that analytics world standpoint, you put Rizzo in that 2 spot, a guy that gets on base a lot in front of Chris Bryant. And plus you set up that right, left, right top of the order, which I kind of like.
Yeah, and one thing that I haven't seen when you talk about analytics and setting up the lineup is kind of what I was talking about and what you were talking about as well in a National League lineup, because in an American League lineup, it's obviously going to be longer because you have a DH in there and you don't have a pitcher batting in the 9 spot. So I wonder statistically what the difference is when you're doing that, batting a guy in that 2 hole like that as opposed to maybe third or fourth or wherever it is, the difference between having that pitcher there at the bottom. But everybody but the National League, just about everybody in the world, has the DH, and And it seems like that two spot with the analytics and the whole thing is a big spot. So.
And, Sean, you remember in 98 during the Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa home run chase, Cardinal manager Tony La Russa started taking the pitcher out of the nine hole.
Right.
Because he wanted more people on base in front of McGwire.
Right.
So that was kind of his thinking in that moment. We have seen a lot of managers go to that through the years. Madden is not a big guy on doing that. So if you're going to bat Bryant first, I almost like somebody else hitting ninth, but I don't know if it's that big a deal. But I'll say this, and maybe I'm going too deep into my thinking, but I really like a left-handed batter batting second, too, because if you get that leadoff man on, then all of a sudden his pull side is going to be wide open with the first baseman holding the runner on and the second baseman probably at double play depth. There's a lot of real estate for that left-handed batter to poke the baseball through the right side of the pull side. So now that doesn't always work out because Rizzo, for example, if he gets pitched away, he's got to go the other way. But I just like taking advantage of the pull side with the runner on base by putting that lefty with pop in the two hole, because all of a sudden I think the possibilities increase. And maybe I'm overthinking that. That might be too in-depth, but that's just something as I've watched the game and see how things unfold. I just like that lefty in the two spot for that reason.
Well, I mean, if the leadoff guy gets on, then the least you want from your number two guy is what? To advance that guy. And the best chance you have to do that is by hitting it to the right side. So that makes a lot of sense that if you've got that and a guy that, especially a contact type of guy, that makes a lot of sense to have him batting second.
This is the second straight night I've ate up your rapid fire time by jabbering.
That's all right.
I just saw that today and I'm like, you know what? I think we just need to go down that road a little bit because that's fascinating. Bryant leading off today. I wouldn't do it. I think the opposing managers are okay with it. But you know what the bottom line is? He went 3-for-4 with a run scored. And he's hitting .301, and your leadoff hitter has a .920 OPS. Good grief.
That's right.
Not too many teams are going to have that. All right, let's get to some rapid fire.
All right, let's switch gears to a football question. We've done some of this stock-type questions this week. So I have another one for you today.
Okay.
Which former Notre Dame football player would you invest in like a stock over the next 5 years? Will Fuller, Jalen Smith, Ronnie Stanley, or someone else? Remembering now, the idea of investing in a stock is buy low, sell high. So I didn't include a couple of top 10 NFL draft guys in there for that reason, because I think their stock is already pretty high. So
that's an interesting question, because I've seen data that Ronnie Stanley arguably is one of the best left tackles in the National Football League. So his stock's going to be pretty high already.
Okay.
I don't know what Jalen Smith's stock is, because if he's the guy before the injury against Ohio State, I mean, his stock's going to be pretty expensive. It's going to be Apple. But then he's had the injury. He has turned the corner. He doesn't have the ankle brace anymore. So I'm not sure where the stock is with him. Fuller, you know, you got Hopkins on that team at wide receiver as the number one.
Right.
So I think his stock's going to be a little lower, but I like that stock because Will Fuller and Deshaun Watson teamed up a lot in fall practice last year working together.
Yep, that's right.
It paid off in the regular season as Fuller had a lot of big plays when Watson was healthy. Because of that, I'm going to go with Will Fuller, because I think the obvious stock to buy would be Hopkins at wide receiver for the Texans. But due to that built-in relationship already between Watson and Fuller, I am going to go with Will Fuller.
I like that. I like that. I do think we're going to hear a lot more from Will Fuller this year than his first couple of years, especially if both he is 100% and Deshaun Watson is 100%. I think that's going to be a good – they're going to have – that's a really good with him and Hopkins on the outside. I mean, that's a really good receiver tandem they're going to have down there. I'm going to go with Jalen Smith, though, on mine.
Can't blame you.
Because now, I like what you said. You said that's Apple stock, right? That Jalen Smith is potentially Apple stock. I don't think he's there yet because of the fact that he's
before the injury.
Here. Yeah, that's right. He obviously missed a whole year because of the injury. And, I mean, he would have been at least a top five, if not the number one overall pick in the draft, had he not been hurt. So he ends up going in the second round. The rehab takes a long time. He came back last year. Looked good for a guy who had a gruesome injury like he had, but he was probably still 80-85%, something like that. Despite that, he still ended up being the Cowboys' second-leading tackler. And now, during their mini camp and their OTAs and all that, he's had that brace off, that AFO brace, and all the reports that I'm seeing down there, reports and quotes and everything else, says that he is looking real good. He struggled getting sideline to sideline last year and dropping back into pass coverage at times. He was really good as a straight-ahead pass rusher, though. But he says he's added 8 pounds of muscle this year. And get this, 3.5% body fat on Jalen Smith. And he says he's faster than he was when he's at Notre Dame. So if that's all true, I think his stock is going to get into that Apple range pretty quickly this season. And so I think we're going to see a much different looking version of Jalen Smith this fall if all these glowing reports are true. So that's who I'm going with.
If all those things turn out, holy cow, boy, do the Cowboys look a whole lot different on the defensive side of the football.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot different. Okay, another football question for you, and this has to do with another guy who's been limited by injuries. Indianapolis Colts head coach Frank Reich said yesterday that Andrew Luck is making great progress, but then when he was asked if Luck is throwing yet, Reich said, quote, no throwing the football, end quote. So, with minicamp next week and training camp just 7 weeks away, scale of 1 to 10, how worried should the Colts be about this?
I think it's got to be a 10. It's got to be a situation right now down there. They've got to be very concerned. Now, they know more than us. They're not going to tell us everything that's going on. So we just have to go on what we know. He has still not thrown a football. It's been over a year. An NFL football we're talking about.
Exactly.
Not just like a small
football. Or something, yeah.
But a real NFL football, it's been, I think they said it was January 2017. You have to be concerned. Now, I was actually having a conversation in the office today about this very subject, so it's funny you bring it up. And my question is, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a quarterback, but I would think just like a pitcher, it takes you a while to build up arm strength.
Yeah.
And I would have to think there's going to be a fatigue factor at some point. Almost like a dead arm for a pitcher coming out of spring training or early in the regular season. And as he's continuing to build arm strength early in the year, is he going to be able to throw the ball 40 yards down the field? Or is he going to be a dink and dunk quarterback? So I think it goes beyond just being able to throw the football. How well can he throw the football deep down the field? Because if he's a guy that you know he cannot throw deep, well, then you can really bring your defense close to the line of scrimmage. Your cornerbacks and your safeties can play the game a whole lot differently when you don't have to worry about the ball going over their head. So until he throws a football, an NFL football, I don't see how we can have any other answer than 10.
See, and that's I have to agree with that because this all started as a labrum tear, the band that holds your shoulder together. And you can ask any pitcher who's ever had labrum surgery. Evan Sharpley's brother Ryan had it. Brian Lawrence, the former South Bend Cubs pitching coach, he had it when he was a professional. They'll all tell you, you have labrum, you're just, those guys are never the same afterwards. And you're talking about a guy throwing a baseball. Now, some of them throwing it obviously up to mid-90s or 100, obviously, but football is much bigger, weighs a lot more than a baseball. So I can't imagine that we're sitting here this far down the road. He's had multiple procedures on this thing. We don't know exactly what happened when he went to Europe, but he had something done over there after the initial surgery was done in January 2017. So the fact that he's still sitting here, he hasn't thrown a ball. The Colts, they try to put a positive spin on it every time they're asked about this, but I mean, Frank Reich saying that he's making great progress. How can it be great if he's not throwing a football? And we're sitting here and they're 7 weeks away from training camp. I don't know how it could be considered great. They're just 6-16 in the games that he's missed over the last two-plus years. So I have to agree with you. It's got to be a 10.
And, Sean, I don't think they're sandbagging. There's no reason to hide that data from the NFL. I don't really think it affects anything. Honestly, probably the thing that it hurts more than anything else or affects the most is maybe ticket sales. Are Colts fans going to want to pay top dollar or keep those tickets if Luck is not going to play early in the year? So, to me, that's a factor. But, I don't think they're withholding information. I think they're being dead honest. There's really no benefit to them withholding information at this time. The NFL knows if Luck isn't going to play, who the starter is going to be, and if Luck plays, then they're just going to have to wait and see how effective he is.
Absolutely. And again, their training camp is 7 weeks away. So,
isn't that something?
We'll find out sooner or later, but it just does not seem good right now. Yeah, I know. It's amazing that we're sitting here talking about training camp sneaking up on us here pretty soon. Okay, back to some Cubs. Cubs and Pirates, they played game one today, but it's, you know, this has hardly been thought of as a rivalry historically, Cubs and Pirates, I think, but with everything that's happened between these two NL Central teams already this year, do you buy or sell this weekend series as must-see baseball?
No, I don't think so, because I doubt anything's going to happen of too significance from the extracurricular column, and the Pirates are not a serious contender in the National League Central. I mean, to me, and with the win today, the Cubs have caught the Brewers for first place in the National League Central, and you look a little deeper, the Cubs are actually a loss ahead, or a game ahead in the loss column. That's the proper way to say it. The Brewers have played two more games, and the Cubs have a better winning percentage now than Milwaukee. And the Pirates are now 6.5 back. They're 3-7 in their last 10. So, again, if you're coming for pushing and shoving and meeting on the mound, the bullpen's running out, I guess tune in. But in terms of anything else, I don't think it's must-see television, because the Buccos right now are not a serious contender in the Central. And after that great start, oh, by the way, they're under 500 now.
Yeah, that's true. Here's just a quick rundown of everything that's happened, though. Pirates manager Clint Hurdle calling out Javier Baez because he didn't like his bat flips. That was the first thing in the Wrigley series a month or two ago.
That was fair.
Yeah, Joe Maddon fired back at Clint Hurdle through the media, sticking up for Javier Baez, which I think he has to do, whether you
right or not,
buy it all or not. Yep, that's right. Anthony Rizzo with a hard slide into Pirates catcher Elias Diaz at a home plate. It was called legal on the field. It was later ruled to be an illegal slide. And then, of course, 2 days later, you had Joe Musgrove, the pitcher, sliding hard into Baez at second base. And we've had the benches cleared at that point. There's been at least one other benches clearing situation. So maybe not must-see just as far as for the playing of the game, but excuse me. I had a little coughing attack there, I'm sorry. But at least for all the other stuff, I think something is bound to happen this weekend.
You think?
I think so. I mean, it's happened, at least, how many times have they played? Is this the third or fourth series already? Let me look here real quick.
Sure.
Let's see. One, two.
Well, I think the slides are kind of even.
Yeah.
So we've canceled each other out. We haven't had any beanball wars. The managers have had their say. So I think we're kind of done until something else happens, and I don't expect anything else to happen.
This is the fourth series.
Is it? Okay.
I mean, nothing happened today, so we shall see, I guess. But
we're all even.
They've made headlines every time they've played so far, it seems like. So, all right, I know we've got to keep moving forward, so we can take our break and have Ron Paulus coming up next.
Very good. This is Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Along with Eric Hansen, I'm Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat here on WSBT Radio. We're joined now by Ron Paulus, Notre Dame Football Director of Player Development, and Irish quarterback from 94 through 97, setting 20 school records as the signal caller for the Fighting Irish. Ron, it's Darren. Good to talk to you. How are you today?
Doing very good. Thanks, Darren. Good to talk to you guys, and looking forward to visiting with you.
You bet. Thank you so much for your time. And we're here at Four Winds Field. You're going to be at Four Winds Field on Monday as the Irish football team will take part in a charity softball game at 7 o'clock. And they're going to take on area law enforcement officers with proceeds going toward cops. And, Ron, maybe a little background. Why is this an important event for the University of Notre Dame and the football squad?
Well, as we look at the community, we like to do as much as we can in on our campus community and then within the South Bend community. And, you know, as you look around, there's different people whose lives are affected and intertwined with our lives. And, you know, we have security details that certainly travel with our football program. And, you know, our guys have opportunity to mix and mingle with different areas of law enforcement on different occasions. We do some work with different entities downtown, the food bank and the Center for the Homeless. And, you know, we look for an opportunity where we could affect someone else. So the law enforcement became a natural fit and an easy way for us to interact with them and raise some money for Indiana Cops, which benefits the concerns of police survivors. And, you know, what better way to do it than get out at Four Winds Field.
Ron, this is Eric Hansen. I'm sure that people look at your title and say, okay, Director of Player Development. What is that? Is that a coaching position? Is it something behind the scenes? I think there's so many tentacles to this. How would you summarize when people ask you your involvement with the football program? What do you tell them is the thrust of what you do?
I deal with everything off the field for our players. Okay. We have outstanding coaching staff led by head coach Brian Kelly. They get incredible skill development from those coaches. They get incredible strength and conditioning development from Matt Bayless and our strength staff. Our operations team keeps the whole program moving in the right direction. The recruiting team keeps an eye on the future. And I pretty much work with the guys in all aspects off the field. I want our guys to relieve stress and enjoy life off the field so that they can enjoy life and have success on the field. So I deal with helping create programming for our players to develop as people, community service events, leadership programs, compliance, housing. I'm our direct liaison to our academic world. Anything that the guys are dealing with off the field, the parents I deal with, welcome weekend when they come to campus. So it's everything off the field. And the idea is that, you know, there aren't many guys, and you can look back through history and at all different programs, there's not many guys that are a mess off the field and have struggles off the field and still have success on the field. So we want to keep their life off the field in order and help them enjoy that and prepare for life beyond the football field and allows them to free up their mind and have good success on the field.
Okay, Ron, we're going to circle back to the softball game here, but I wanted to kind of go along with this theme that you just explained what you're doing. And I believe the softball game is actually part of the 4x40 Excellence Beyond ND program. You know, people know that the veteran players are back on campus and participating in this program and also in, I would have guessed, their Matt Bayless has them pretty busy too in the weight room. But the freshmen and regular students don't start summer school into the middle of the month, a couple weeks from now. Can you talk about the genesis for the 4x40 program and kind of what Coach Kelly and what you want to get out of these 2 weeks before summer school starts?
Sure. These 2 weeks before summer school allow us as a program and as student athletes to develop. Great strides in development are being made in the weight room. A large focus of part of the day is on their physical training. On the other part of the day is their training as people. And we've created the 4x40 Excellence Beyond Player Development Program, which brings them back to campus for the first 2 weeks of June. We train in the morning, our physical bodies. We train in the afternoon, our mental and personal development. We do that with different speakers. We'll work with people on campus. We'll work with people off outside of campus, some national speakers that have come to campus over the last couple of years, and again this year. We'll work with the Career Center. The Center for Career Development on campus will spend 3 days with the guys working on developing their career aspects of their lives. We'll work with gender relations on campus, talking about healthy relationships and living properly in the campus of Notre Dame. We'll do a lot of different things, and we have some service products, which brings us to the opportunity to play the softball game with local law enforcement. But the idea is that it gets them back to campus. It gets them on a training regimen as athletes and as students and as citizens in our community. Because as we say in recruiting, and we mean it and believe it, you know, coming to Notre Dame is not just a 4-year choice, but a 40-year decision, a 40-year and beyond. Does that degree and that experience carry you? So that's where we come from with the 4 for 40, and that's why we do it, to help develop them fully as people.
Ron, I'm going to circle back to the football and the four softball game. A couple questions from me. One is, how much is admission for people to come? And two, is there going to be opportunities to interact with the players, either, you know, like get pictures or get autographs or things of that nature?
Sure. The idea of football and the force is it's certainly not to display our softball prowess here on the field, but it's to get our football players in the community. One of the great venues in South Bend is certainly its Four Winds Field, and what a great host the South Bend Cubs have been to create the opportunity. But there's going to be what we're going to do. The setup will be we'll play four different games. We'll break our team into four different groups. We'll play four 3-inning games, so it'll move along pretty quickly. We'll play different law enforcement agencies from the area, including NDSP, the South Bend Police Department, the Mishawaka Police Department, St. Joe County, and the Indiana State Police. And we'll play these four 3-inning games. And while there's teams on the field, the rest of our football players will be up in the stands. They'll be interacting with fans. They'll be out in the kids' zone. They'll be signing autographs, awesome. And very much accessible. People can get autographs. People can take pictures. We want to be in the community. We want to interact with the fans. And ultimately, it is to raise some money for Indiana Cops. So there is a $5 admission charge for anyone older than 12 years old. 12 and under are free. This is an opportunity to interact and raise a little money. So we look forward to everybody coming out, having a nice night. While the South Bend Cubs aren't at home that night, we'll take over the field, and hopefully we don't embarrass ourselves too bad.
I remember some of the stars from last year. Greer Martini was pretty slick with the glove. Give us a scouting report on some of the the players that you think will be really good. And is Brian Kelly going to do anything beyond bossing people around this time? Is he going to get up there with a bat and take a few swings?
I wouldn't expect Coach Kelly to take a few swings. He'll throw out the first pitch, and then and he'll probably resign to egging on the competition from both sides. But, we have guys, it's fun to see, and it's interesting to see you look out and see these guys that are incredible athletes on the football field. And some, it translates. Greer Martini last year certainly was one of them. Brandon Wimbush could probably play baseball at a really highly competitive level. Ian Book made some incredible catches in the outfield. You know, there's guys that are just natural athletes that can certainly do it. And then there's other guys that really look like they have no business being on the softball field. So we have a good time with it. They bust each other. They're going to create their lineups and set their teams here in the next couple days. But we're looking forward to having a bunch of good guys out there and having fun with the local law enforcement, knowing that we got beat last year in all the games we played. So we'll see if we can score a couple runs.
I bet the law enforcement guys want to get the ringer Cole Kmet on their team.
Yeah, right. We might have made Cole have – he might have to sit out. He might have to watch this. I don't know. But whoever has Cole will have a good chance.
Ron Paulus is our guest. I have a couple of football questions for you, Ron, before we let you go. I would just like your perspective as a former quarterback. What do you like about Chip Long's style of offense?
I like our aggressive nature on offense. I like that we play offense offensively. I think he does a really good job of of calling an aggressive game. I think he looks to take shots when he can. I think he likes to keep pressure on the defense. And, you know, that's exciting. That's exciting offensive brand of football. And when you have guys that can perform, you get great results like we had last year. And, you know, so I like the way we're aggressive on offense. You know, there's only so many concepts in the world of offensive football. You know, but it's a matter of when you call them and how you implement them into your offense that makes you an effective offense. And I think Chip does a great job with that.
And finally, Ron, just from your time as a coach and also as a quarterback, give Irish fans a little insight because they don't get to see practice. How difficult is it as a quarterback during the middle of the season when you are so focused on the next game to try to work on just tweaking your fundamentals or trying to get better in an area? Is it just almost too difficult? There's not enough time to do that just because of the next game is up so quickly, and also you're so limited working with coaches nowadays?
Well, he is certainly limited working with the coaches, and that's just based on NCAA rules. But, you know, part of the preparation for the next week is to tune yourself up mentally and tune yourself up physically and get yourself ready to go. What I think our quarterbacks can certainly benefit from is the experience of Tommy Reese. You know, as a coach, he's a sharp, as a player, he was a sharp player. He was really aware. He was a technician. And, you know, he can translate that into coaching. They have a great resource with him. So when you're talking about preparing a young man to perform mentally and physically, you know, that's what you do. That's what coaches do during the week. That's what we want to do at all positions. And certainly our guys have a good one in Tommy Reese to get that done.
Ron Paulus, the former Irish quarterback, now director of player development for the Fighting Irish football program, talks a little football and reminded everyone about the charity softball game at Four Winds Field Monday night at 7 o'clock. The proceeds go to Indiana Cops, $5 to get in to the ballpark at Four Winds Field. Irish football players will be playing, and there will be autograph opportunities, selfie opportunities, so a great chance to get up close and personal with the Fighting Irish football team and watch the football players play a little softball at the home of the South Bend Cubs. Again, that is Monday night at 7 o'clock at Four Winds Field. Four Winds Invitational underway, the Symetra Tour event at Blackthorn in South Bend. And there are three players in the clubhouse with five under par 67s. One of our guests on the golf show had a pretty good round earlier today, and that was Gabriella Then from USC, a four under par 68. She is tied for fourth. And we had Becca Huffer on the program last night, Notre Dame graduate, player on the Symetra Tour. She carded a one over par 73 earlier today, so she is six shots off the pace currently at the Four Winds Invitational at Blackthorn. Again, free admission into that golf tournament. You park by the soccer fields and enjoy professional golf at Blackthorn. And the golf show tomorrow will have some features involving the Four Winds Invitational. You can catch the golf show Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. here on WSBT. Sports Beat tonight brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. By Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. By Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn Card. It is just $99 to buy the card. And with that card, you can receive up to 80% off rounds of golf, including cart, at Blackthorn. And we are also presented by Ivy Court Inn and Suites. With competitive corporate rates, you're in with Ivy Court Inn and Suites. Have a great weekend. Sports Beat back live on Monday. South Bend Cubs baseball coming your way next from West Michigan. Pre-game coverage starts in just a couple of moments. This has been Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.